Your New York weekend is not complete without the Joan Hamburg Show on 77 WABC.
All right, everyone. You are now officially part of the Joan Hamburg Show, which you can be part of every Saturday starting at 2 o'clock. Or you can enjoy one of our podcasts. Just go to the OGPodcastNetwork.com. Anyway, we love that you are very much a part of the Joan Hamburg Show. And incidentally, every week I say, I am not going to eat sugar. So guess what happened? It turns out, who knew, that it's National Cheesecake Day on the 30th. And all cheesecakes, the best cheesecakes we think in the world, Eileen's Special Cheesecake on Cleveland Place, are going to be 50% off. That strawberry blueberry was heaven. And the cannoli cheesecake, you wouldn't believe. The chocolate cheesecake. No one does cheesecakes like Eileen. Give her a call, 212-966-5585. And, of course, I ate cheesecake. All right, guys, we've got a great show coming up, so stay tuned.
New York culture with real New Yorkers. Joan Hamburg, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Welcome, everyone, to the Joan Hamburg Show. And for over 30 years, Rob Bartlett has held court with Imus in the Morning. A lot of wonderful characters, very funny. And I'm such a theater nut. I always loved seeing Rob when he was on Broadway. And little did I know, Rob, that you started in an improv group years ago with Eddie Murphy. Who knew?
Yes. Who knew? Who knew?
Who knew? Is that, well, now, of course, you're doing a podcast, among other things. But tell me, when you first started, was it you wanted to be an actor? How did you ever get involved in the world of radio?
Well, when I started out as a stand-up comic in the late 70s, and it was with an eye on becoming an actor, because I had been trained as an actor and always wanted to be an actor. And at that time, it seemed like stand-up comics were being cast left and right to be actors. And Robin Williams, Steve Martin.
Right, it was
a
great time.
That was the quickest way. Yeah, I thought that was the quickest way to getting an acting career. And wound up, you know, being on the road as a stand-up for a number of years because I discovered the casting agents, you know, really weren't crazy about having stand-up comics. Or wouldn't think of calling them in because they were afraid that they wouldn't know how to, I guess,
learn a script. Perform,
right, or perform with other people, you know, and, yeah. And comics are not really known for being the most giving of people when they're on stage. So I fought that for many years. And I fell into radio because I was doing a benefit for, I don't know, Make-A-Wish Foundation, I believe it was, and was looking for a way to promote it. And a friend of mine who was also a stand-up comic, we were on we were doing a one-nighter in New Jersey, and I happened to be talking about, you know, doing this benefit. And he said, well, why don't you come on Imus? He was Imus's producer at the time. His name was Mark Sheff. And so I went on with Imus, I think, that Friday. They would have stand-up comics come in on Fridays, guest comics. And this was when he was still at WNBC, 66. And I went on, and I did my signature bit at the time, which was Tom Carvel, which was a multi-character thing where I was a Tom Carvel and one of the owners who weren't really happy, one of the franchise owners, because they were told that they had to give away ice cream for free on Wednesdays, Sunday. And so I just kind of degenerated into that. And he loved it and said, come back anytime. So I kind of wormed my way in. Every time I could, I'd kind of just show up.
But, so 31 years later...
Yeah, and then he went to rehab a few months after that, and then and while he was in rehab, I was kind of coming in and doing stuff with Charles McCord, his brilliant newsman.
He was brilliant.
Amazing. And he was hosting the show, and I was writing production pieces that we would record after the show and do, you know, for the next day. And we did that until Imus came back. And then a couple of months later, NBC was sold to FAN, and we moved over to FAN. And when we moved over, they offered me a contract, and
that was
31
it.
Years later.
That was a lot of adventures. And now I'm talking to Rob Bartlett, who you know is an actor, a writer, a stand-up, and, of course, very vital part of the Imus show for at least 31 years. So this, you're now embarking upon new adventures.
Yeah. You know, in show business, as I'm sure you know, sometimes you have to make your own way. And I decided that this whole podcast thing seems to be pretty big, but I didn't. It seems to be the wave of the future where broadcasting is going. And I didn't want to do one of those shows where it was just a couple of stand-ups sitting around a microphone talking about the worst gigs they ever had in their careers, or arguing about the minutiae in comic book movies or whatever. I wanted to do kind of a throwback to the old radio variety shows, because I'm a big fan of obviously old-time comedy, and I used to have a few recordings of the old Jack Benny show and those types of shows, and I thought, you know, they haven't really done that since. So I kind of married that to the old National Lampoon Radio Hour format, which is an updated version of that that was on I think WBAI in the
early days.
Right. And I thought it was time to do an updated version. So it's a scripted sketch show, kind of like Saturday Night Live, but on the radio. And we have a really talented group of actors. And every Monday evening, we stream live on Facebook. You can actually watch us do radio, which I never understood why people enjoy doing that. But
it works.
It does. And then, we were up on for download and playing on your device on your way to work the next day on iTunes and OG Podcast Network and Google Play.
No, and everyone's talking about your podcast. It's so well done and so beautifully produced. It's honestly, that's the way we used to listen to radio.
Well, that was what I thought. I thought, you know, you can't argue with stuff that really worked. The fact that they don't do it anymore, I don't really understand, because it seems like such a natural, and we have more fun on Monday nights, and we're always under rehearsed. So,
but that's what makes it special.
It really does. I mean, sometimes we screw up and we laugh harder than anybody. We have a live studio audience that joins us. We do it from stage 17.
Oh, you're kidding! There. So how do you get the audience?
We it's friends and family, and then we run contests
and
online.
Everyone.
We have a contest where we call Crazy About Swayze, where I'll provide a line of dialogue from a Patrick Swayze movie, and if you can email me with the answer, you can win a pair of tickets.
I love that.
Yeah, so, silly things like that. We've had a couple of guests. We had Billy J. Kramer from The British Invasion this past week. He did a new song that's coming out on our forthcoming CD, but he also did Bad to Me, which is one of my favorite songs, which Lennon and McCartney wrote for him. And he had a couple of stories about growing up with the Beatles in Liverpool and whatnot, and he did a few sketches with us where he played himself, so he was prepared. It was a lot of fun. You know, it's a lot of fun. We have more fun than we probably should. But
no, it's great, and it definitely transfers to an audience, because you made us all ashamed, because we were winging a lot of it on our podcast. We thought, hey, what's this guy doing? He's got like a real show. It's like the Arthur Godfrey Hour, only funnier.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, because that was the golden age of radio. And you're right. I don't know why people gave up that format. You know, even now, when you play those old TV shows, I still look at old reruns of I Love Lucy and just crack up. Well, nothing is as funny as that stuff.
You're talking classics. I mean, there's nobody who doesn't realize that that's just, you know, the state of the art. You know, 60, almost 70 years later, it's still incredible stuff.
Funny.
You
know, Archie Bunker, he's perfect today.
Yeah, I'm telling you. I mean, I used to like watching reruns of the old George Burns show.
Oh, me too.
He would break down the fourth wall, and he would be up in his study, and he would look at the rest of his guests at the house who were in the den, and he'd comment on that. We kind of do a little bit of that too, where we kind of break down the fourth wall, and we have little little asides with each other on the stage as we're doing the program, kind of step out a little bit. And so, which is also fun, you know.
I'm excited for you. And, you know, it's the truth that podcasts, they're here and they're the future. And that's how people listen.
Yeah. I mean, it's the ultimate on demand. You can you download it, put it on your phone, and listen to it either with your Bluetooth in your car as you're driving to work, or with your headphones if you're taking the train to work. It's
and you can hear Rob and his pals. It's a really funny comedy hour. You can follow him on YouTube. You can go on to Facebook.com/RobbioRadio. I mean, a lot of good stuff.
That's where you can watch it live every Monday night at 7:30 Eastern PM, because my days of getting up in the morning are over.
Well, listen, you spent a grown-up lifetime doing
that. Yeah, well, that's true. I don't know what to do with myself now with all this.
And especially, and you know, we've all, as listeners, those of us who were not part of it, sort of would listen to Imus, and our moods would depend on was it a cranky day, was it a good day?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's amazing how you become part of people's lives. You're so ingrained in their daily routine that you don't realize how much a part of their day you are when you're on the radio in the morning. And, you know, I still get emails from people who are bemoaning the fact that they have, you know, they have this big void in their lives.
No, it's true. Because radio, the magic of radio is that you, that person on the air that they're attached to, becomes everything they need. The best friend, the husband, the whatever, you name it. And you're there. I tell the story of when one of my kids was going to, for a play date, you know, a big New York thing, and I'm dropping him off in a taxi, giving him 90 warnings. Shake hands, don't eat with your fingers, you know, the usual. And the cabbie, good-looking young guy with an accent, probably an Israeli, turned around and said, O-S-H. I said, what? You don't even know me. He said, you're just a mother. He said, you got into my car. I recognized your voice. I came to New York, and you were everything in my life, and you're just a mother. And he didn't mean to be insulting, but I said, you got radio without even knowing it. Right? That's it. You know, where they're invisible, I'm what you need.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm excited for you, Rob. And your voice on daily radio is really missed because no one did the kind of sketches you did or the kind of characters. Thank you. And we look forward to sharing many more podcasts.
Sounds great, Joan. Thanks for having me on.
Pleasure. Take care. I'm Joan Hamburg. You just heard the one and only Rob Bartlett. More after this.
New York culture with real New Yorkers. Joan Hamburg, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Technology, we talk about it all the time, or we should be talking about it all the time. Our complaint here, where we live in the world of talk and radio, is that future generations may not be able to talk at all because they're just used to looking down, instant answers. They're used to technology. So is technology making us smarter? Is it making us happier? Or is it making us lonely and isolated, reducing our choices, transforming our love lives? A fascinating new book came out, Your Happiness Was Hacked: Why Tech is Winning the Battle to Control Your Brain and How to Fight Back. One of the co-authors, Alex Akiver, is one of the leaders in this field. He's been a chief marketing officer. He's been an editor at Business Week, researcher at Duke University, and been with leading technology companies. He does columns for Fortune. He's a consultant, and it's a really good, hard look, a real conversation of happiness and how it was hacked. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Joan. I appreciate it.
Well, we talk about this here all the time because it's getting harder and harder to find particularly young people who can talk. you know, a couple of words, a conversation, but soon the eyes go down and that little phone or iPad is right there. So it's a brave new world.
And I'd counter that as well. I'd say you're correct. And it's the millennial generation and even some of the baby boomers have the same problem as well. I mean, you see it with couples at restaurants where maybe they're supposed to be having a romantic dinner and instead they're looking down at their phone every 5 seconds.
So annoying. But is there really an answer to this? Now, obviously, you and your co-author show the dark side, and even things like Facebook, which we're all talking about now, its influence on the 16 election, its influence in Europe in with the Brexit thing in the UK.
So we think that there is a path to having happiness or having more control over your happiness and using technology. The reality is today, you can't avoid technology. I mean, if you want to check in on an airplane, for example, you can't go to the airport and print out your ticket. You'll get the last seating row in the airplane. And some airlines like Delta are even wiping out paper tickets entirely. You know, no matter where you look, you have to be online,
exactly,
in a device, in a smartphone to interact with society. At the same time, we think that there are ways that people can change their behaviors and change the way they think about technology, really be more introspective and thoughtful to understand what's happening. And from that understanding, they'll recognize I should do things differently.
But Alex, how do you get people to change? Are they even aware? Obviously, technology even affects your brain or your brain waves.
I think most people are not fully aware. What's been amazing to me is my own personal journey as I was writing this book and starting to take much closer notes on how I spent my day, because I am immersed in technology.
Of course, that's your life.
Exactly. I started with broadband internet as soon as it came out. But my own personal journey, even just with a simple pen and paper, noting down how I'm spending each moment, how many times I'm checking email, when I'm looking at Twitter, it gives you power to understand. Once you see how much is actually happening there, then you can start to think, oh, okay, you become a lot more aware of all your behaviors, and that lets you be able to think about changing them, because then they're no longer reflexive. They're something that's intentional. And lots of other people that I've talked to about this, too, as I've been writing the book or who have read the book, have said the same thing, that once they become more aware, then it becomes easier to change. Now, granted, that's just the very first step, but in the book, we lay out 5 or 6 questions to ask yourself, and the first one is a really basic one, which is when you are using a piece of technology, a software service, Twitter, Facebook, whatever, after you're finished or while you're using it, do you feel happier or do you feel sadder? Do you feel better or worse? Because if you feel not so great afterwards, or if it feels kind of empty, then you should ask yourself, really, is this the way I want to spend my time on this earth?
But I'm curious, and you do point out your own journey with it and your co-writer's journey. He almost killed himself and you almost killed a whole bunch of people because you were so obsessed with what was coming on your phone. But why, and I wasn't quite sure I understood this, why does it make people unhappy, more unhappy than they might be? Loneliness I can understand, because anyone who thinks that befriending someone on Facebook as your real friend seems ridiculous.
It's a really good question. And the reason why is it plays to our sort of base survival instincts in some key ways. So, for example, when you're looking at a Facebook feed and you see all these happy people on the feed, and you think, oh, they're having a nicer vacation than I am. I wish I could be them. I mean, that makes you unhappy. There's a lot of interactions where you are sucked into conversations or meetings at work, for example. I mean, how many times, I don't know if this happens to you, but many people, they end up in lots of useless meetings, and that's because technology makes it so easy to schedule meetings.
Right.
Similar thing with email. It's like, oh, I have to reply to this email because there's 6 other people on the thread, and even though it doesn't mean anything. At deeper levels, technology starts to impact really core pieces of our health. And by that, I mean, for example, the phones in our bedrooms, reducing the amount of sleep we have. And that's a really quick way to be unhappy, is to cut back the time you're sleeping from 7 hours to 6 hours a night. Another thing that people don't realize is that phones and technology are pretty rapidly replacing time outdoors and time spent doing physical activities. Children today are, by a number of research studies, considerably less fit than they were 30 or 40 years ago. That actually impacts happiness, because people who are fit, active, people who are in nature tend to be happier. So it's really attacking us at many of these levels, and we need to try to fight back and take back control.
Yeah, I mean, you're sounding the alarm, and it's really got to be picked up by everyone. I said to my producer that you pointed out that the average person sends at least 77 emails, and she said, oh, that's nothing. You know, I'd go much more than that. I mean, if you heard her phone pulsing every time she got an email, she must get hundreds over the couple of hours we're in the studio, maybe more.
In certain businesses, that's life. And for people with those kind of jobs, it's really hard to disconnect. I advocate strongly that people do disconnect for at least some parts of the day. I mean, of course, like I said, you can't all disconnect. If you're in the media business, try telling your boss that you're not going to use email or something.
Exactly.
You know, you don't have a choice. But the question is, how do you control this? How do you create a context and an environment that lets you maintain a modicum of happiness, or, you know, time away from these devices, so that your brain can rest and be more creative? Because frankly, all of these interruptions makes it harder to be creative, harder to think deeply, harder to come up with really innovative ideas, writing, solutions, questions.
Yeah. And do you see, now you travel all over. And by the way, everyone, I'm talking to Alex Sulkever, who is the co-author of Your Happiness Was Hacked. And it's a fascinating look at the world of technology and how it's really making people more unhappy than they were, reducing their choices, affecting their dating lives, and affecting their health. So do you find, as you work with these companies all over, that the art of conversation, maybe even creativity, is definitely being undermined?
So that's a really hard question to answer. And the one statistic I would point at, which calls into question a lot of this, or really kind of sounding an alarm, is what's called total factor productivity. And that's a measurement of how much each worker produces. You would think that with these amazing technology benefits, that all of these things that tech has given to us, it would be surging. But in fact, it's been stagnant for the last decade, even as we've seen the highest levels of technology adoption we've ever seen. So I think that that's an interesting proxy, which may be telling us exactly what you're saying, which is that, you know, it is taking away our time for creativity. It may be impacting our ability to really change businesses for the good. When it comes to the art of conversation, I think that it is impacting that quite a bit. I think that email and chat are starting to take over, or have taken over a lot of what used to be face-to-face conversations.
Right.
And that's sad, because you have an emotional connection, and communication is better when it's face-to-face. And there's a lot of research that actually proves this.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question, after going through Your Happiness Was Hacked, that we, all of us, have to understand that with the goodies, and we can't underestimate the incredible benefits, that there's a lot of dangers when we allow technology to control our lives. When 3- and 4-year-olds are given devices, basically like babysitters in a way. I mean, do you have children?
I have 2 children, and we struggle with that as well.
They're what do you
teenagers.
Do?
One of my children plays Fortnite. And that's been, a little bit of a source of friction, but we that's sort of an interesting segue, because we worked out a decent solution. You know, they want to play Fortnite because all of their friends are on it. So the way that some of these games are designed is, if everybody gets on the game and it's social, then you feel kind of excluded if you're not in it.
Right.
If you're a teenager, being excluded is the
horrible.
Worst thing possible.
Mm-hmm.
They play the game for a half hour or 45 minutes a week. maybe two tops, and we monitor it, and they're very good about it. And when we say, look, that's enough for the week, they shut it down. And that's a pretty healthy relationship. And so in that case, I don't feel bad about them using text.
Because you know that it's controlled. You know, our producer was saying that when she goes out with her friends, which she does quite often, they all put their phones away in a whatever, a pile. And the first person that reaches for that phone to take a little peek has to pay the whole bill. So it's definitely cut down on their usage because there's a penalty.
So I love that kind of approach. And I even take it one further, which is that not only put it in a pile, but put it in your pocket, you know, and the first person who takes it out. And the reason I say put it in your pocket is because there's research that shows even the presence of a smartphone on a table reduces the intimacy and the closeness of the conversation. Not even if it's facing up, just having the phone in front of you on the table.
Where, you know, if in our neighborhood there's a ton of these little manicure salons, and you go into them, and every little manicure table has phones. Has the manicurist's phone and the client's phone. And if they bring their little kids, the toddlers, those kids are already on an iPad, you know, playing some kind of little game or watching something. You know, they could be 2 years old. They're already doing that. So your book couldn't be more timely with everything that's going on. And yes, Your Happiness Was Hacked, the brand new book, and it's up to you to interfere at this point.
It really is up to us to take control of our fate, because, I mean, the technology companies, their job is to make money. And even if some of the things they do are, you know, are not really ethical, like look at what's happened with Facebook,
right.
It really is ultimately up to us to set the rules and change the game.
Exactly. All the best to you, Alex.
Thank you very much for having me, Joe.
I appreciate you taking the time. Alex Salkiever with his brand new book, Your Happiness Was Hacked, a wake-up call for each and every one of us. All right, stay tuned. Much more. And I'm Joan Hamburg for WABC.
New York culture with real New Yorkers. Joan Hamburg, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
We love movies. This is such a good time of year to go to the movies. And we have a lovely new film coming in Friday, and it's opening in our market. You'll be able to see it in limited theaters in the city, in New York, and then I'm sure it's going to go wide. It's called Puzzle, and it stars Kelly MacDonald from Scotland originally. You know from her work on Boardwalk Empire, Brave, worked with some of the big filmmakers in No Country for Old Men. That's the Coen brothers, Gosford Park, a true classic, and Trainspotting. Welcome to you, Kelly MacDonald. And wasn't it when you were just a kid, around 19 years old, that you picked up a flyer about sort of a cattle call audition, and it was for Trainspotting?
It was, yeah. It was very much a cattle call. It was an open invite for people that might be interested in starring in a new Danny Boyle film. And so I had been thinking about drama school, and I thought, well, this will be a good sort of experience of an audition to take with me to drama school. So I went along, and through a series of eliminations, I got through to the last. It was between me and one other young woman in the end, and I got the part.
That, which was, you know, it sounds trite, but it was absolutely life-changing, because out of nowhere, right?
Yeah, absolutely out of nowhere. And from somewhere, you know, I grew up somewhere that people don't do this for a living.
Right.
At the time, even, you wouldn't see film units sort of on the streets or anything. It's a bit different now. Quite a lot gets filmed in Glasgow, but it was just completely life-changing.
And it's so amazing that the flyer was handed out there, because you're right, that community had very little, if anything, at that time. People went to the movies, mm-hmm. which was, you know, your own story. That's how you got your image of Hollywood and what you might want to be. But still, and then to get the part, and then it all started happening.
It did, in a very slow, manageable way. I wasn't catapulted into the limelight or anything like that, like I've seen happen with other people. And I'm so grateful I got to sort of make mistakes and sort of learn what I do. And yeah, just bit by bit.
Right. And Puzzle is a very different kind of film. It's a lovely portrait of a middle-aged, well, she actually isn't middle-aged. She, you know, today, you live in New York City, most people don't even think about getting married until they're 40. But here your character, Agnes, married probably since she got out of high school, two kids, two boys, and never left far from home. In fact, lives in the home she grew up with. And she's living this very close life where she is the traditional housewife mother doing everything but chewing their food.
Yeah, it's true. She's a very ordinary woman, and she's just getting on with it. She doesn't think about it too much. She's not happy. She's not sad. She's just, that's just her life. And then strangely, she gets a jigsaw puzzle, which... You know,
a birthday present.
A birthday present, and it's an odd thing that happens where she sits down and does a jigsaw puzzle, and it's almost like it's the first thing she's ever done for no reason and just for herself. And she finds that she's quite good at it, and she finds it quite stimulating, and she can do it fast, and it kind of just changes her in this very small way and makes her start to question everything, and it has this ripple effect on, you know, the family around her.
Right, and you really nailed her. I mean, she lives in a small town, a New Jersey town, but it could be any suburban area. Mm-hmm. Not, and never goes into New York City, but she decides she's going to go find a puzzle shop or where this puzzle was given to her from. And she
does one, and then she wants to do another, and it sort of, she ends up meeting a man that again makes her question who she is and stimulates her in a way that has never happened before. And it's sort of like a it's not a midlife crisis, you know, but it's more like a coming of age, because she's been kind of stuck in the 18-year-old self, you know,
right,
when she got married
and takes care of everyone.
Yeah,
and suddenly her family, as she gets more and more involved with this man, first when she starts to realize her potential. And interesting for us, because I very rarely think of puzzles. You know, you give little kids puzzles as gifts where they put them together, but who knew there was a whole world out there with puzzle clubs and competitions, and how interesting it is, because when you solve them, you've really finished something total and complete.
I know. There's competitions for everything. I didn't really look into the jigsaw lifestyle. but the film sort of, really interestingly for me, is not about her entering a competition and winning a competition. That's like a sideline. It's about bigger things. You know, it's about...
your life.
It's about a woman who knows she has to make a change, or I don't know what would happen to her.
Right, Kelly MacDonald. And suddenly her husband, who accepts her and loves her, but she's still the wallpaper, you know, it's just, he's used to her making him happy at whatever and taking care of everything. They suddenly start to see her in a new light. And it changes everyone's relationship.
Yeah, I think her husband, you know, he's not a modern man, but he's not a bad man.
No, he's a decent man in his way.
He's a decent man, but he's, you know, controlling in his way, and likes his wife to, like, he wraps her in cotton wool. She's clearly had some issues in her past, and he thinks he's doing her a favor by protecting her from herself. And I'm the only person that really can do the work on Agnes is her. And she sort of she finds the confidence through her, you know, her secret life of puzzles,
right,
to be able to give voice to that.
No, and it's an interesting lesson how when you find something, mm-hmm. you have a whole new insight into yourself and a kind of confidence that you've never been able to achieve from living the life that you expected to live.
Yeah, I think it's important for people to find things that they care about, you know, outside of their work and, you know, things that give them pleasure. And, if you get no pleasure in your life, she has no pleasure in her life, but like I said, she doesn't really think about it. She doesn't think about much in this film, and in the duration of this film, she that's what happens. She just starts thinking.
And it's actually, yeah, it's very interesting to see the process that she goes through. And Kelly, you, of course, the mother of two children, so mm-hmm. you have that kind of insight, too, into a parent and
parents. You give a lot of yourself over, like, once you have kids, everything changes. Nothing will ever be the same again. And that, I mean, it's a wonderful thing. But I think everybody can relate, anyone that's a parent can relate to, you know, there's a scene at the beginning of the film where Agnes is preparing a birthday party, and I think it strikes a chord with a lot of people.
And we always, and as a viewer, you think the birthday party, you never think it's her birthday party, because she's doing all the work, and then she goes in and brings out this cake that she made, and of course turns out to be her birthday. But
and the only thing she doesn't do is sing happy birthday to herself.
Of course. And too modest for that. It's called The Puzzle, and it will be right in our own market, just opened. And you're doing so many things, Kelly. You're doing more films, more TV. What's next on your list?
I've got a film with Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly that's coming out at Christmas, a big comedy.
That had to be fun.
Was so fun. I loved it a lot. And also, again, with John C. Reilly, I reprised my role as Merida in the Pixar, from the Pixar movie Brave, in Wreck-It Ralph 2, and Ralph Breaks the Internet. So I've got a little bit in that again. And, I've been busy. I just things are good.
Well, I'm so glad. And where are you living now? Are you in New York, in L.A.?
Oh, no, I live in the U.K.
Yeah.
I lived in New York for a long time, but I just am lucky I get to come back and visit.
Oh, yeah, it's a great city. Do you take the kids back to Glasgow?
Yeah, we live in Glasgow.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So they have a very different kind of life.
Yeah, they do. But they're well-traveled people.
All right. Well, we look forward to enjoying The Puzzle. Congratulations. Continued success. We'll talk to you again very soon.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kelly. Kelly McDonald, starring in a brand new movie. It's a small, very delicate film, and a lovely portrait of a 40-something-year-old woman from a small community, maybe New Jersey. And this could be anyone's life, and it's her coming of age. Thank you for sharing, Kelly, and The Puzzle. I'm Joan Hamburg, and you're listening to WABC.